the go, right? No response. Nettie, the black woman, looked to be in her late 30s. She was tall, with broad shoulders and breasts the size of torpedoes. Her hair was big and brushed over to the right, where the bulk of it stuck out stiffly as if blown by a hard wind. The black strands had a gray cast from all the split ends. She wore blue jeans, an oversized white t-shirt, and white crew socks. Bibiana arranged her mattress beside mine and took a seat, watching Nettie with respect. She was charged with attempt to inflict bodily injury and assault with a deadly weapon. She attacked a wino with an uprooted palm tree. I guess it was a little one, but can you believe that? The other inmate, the white girl, was scarcely more than 20, wearing an ankle-length organza dress and a corsage on one wrist. She was crying so hard it was impossible to figure out what her story was. She sank in a huddle and buried her face in her hands. She and Nettie both reeked of booze. The black woman paced restlessly, staring at Heather, who kept wiping her nose on the hem of her dress. Finally, Nettie stopped pacing and nudged her with a foot.
"What's the matter with you, blubbering away like that? Hush up a minute and tell me what's wrong here."
The girl lifted a tear-streaked face, blotchy with embarrassment. Her nose was pink, her makeup smeared, her fine pale hair coming loose from a complicated arrangement on top that looked like it had been done professionally. There were little sprigs of baby's breath tucked here and there like pale dried twigs. She paused to lick at a tear trickling toward her chin, and then told a garbled tale of her boyfriend, a fight, being left penniless on the side of the freeway, too drunk to stand, picked up by a CHP cruiser, and arrested on the spot. This was her 21st birthday, and she was spending it in the county jail. She'd barfed on her dress, which she'd had on layaway for 6 months at Lerner's. Her daddy was on the city council, and she didn't dare call home. By the time she got to this point, she burst into tears again. The skinny woman on the mattress made a muffled response.
BFD. Big fucking deal.
Nettie, offended, turned on the woman whom she apparently knew. She fired a dark look at the huddled form.
Mind your own business, bitch.
She patted Heather awkwardly, unaccustomed to mothering, but identifying with her plight.
Poor sweet baby. That's all right. That's just fine. Now don't you be upset. Everything's going to be all right.
I stretched out on my side, my head propped up on my hand. Bibiana had her back against the wall, her arms crossed for warmth.
What a crock of shit. People out there killing each other and they arrest someone like her. I don't get it. Call her old man and have him come and get her out of here. He's going to call anyway once he figures out she's not home.
How come you're so down on the police? I asked. Bibiana ran a hand through her hair, giving it a toss.
They killed my pop. My mom's Anglo. He was Latino. They met in high school, and she was crazy about him. She gets knocked up, and they got married. But it worked out okay.
Why'd the cops kill him?
It was just something dumb. He was in a little market and lifted something minor, a package of meat and some chewing gum. The store manager caught him, and they got into a tussle. Some off-duty cop pulled his gun out and fired. All for a pack of ground beef and some chiclets for me. What a waste. My mother never got over it. God, it was awful to watch. She married some guy 6 months later, and he turned out to be a real shit, knocking her around. Talk about bad karma. The cops killed him, too. She'd kick him out, he'd disappear and then show up again all contrite, move in, take her money, beat the crap out of us. He's drunk half the time, doing lewds and coke. Anything else he could get his hands on, I guess. If he wasn't pawing at her, he was pawing at me. I cut him once, right across the face, nearly took his eye out. One night, he got caught breaking into an apartment building 2 doors away from us. He barricaded himself in the place with a 12-gauge. The cops swarmed all over the neighborhood, television crews, SWAT teams, and tear gas. Cops shot him down like a dog. I was 8. It's like, how many times I gotta go through this, you know?
"Sounds like they did you a service on that one," I said. Her smile was bitter, but she made no response.
"Your mother's still alive?" Down in Los Angeles, Bibiana said. What about you? You got family somewhere?
Not anymore. I've been on my own for years.
I thought you were going to do my numbers, I said.
Oh, yeah. What's your birthday?
The date I was using on the fake ID was a match for mine.
May 5th, I said, and gave her the year.
And me without a pencil. Hey, Nettie, you got something to write with?
Nettie shook her head.
Not unless you count chapstick.
Bibiana shrugged.
What the hell? Look here.
She licked her finger and drew a big tic-tac-toe grid on the floor. She wrote the number 5 in the center and raised it to the third power. The lights in the cell were dim, but the floor was so grimy I could see the spit graph without squinting. She said,
This is great. See that? 5 is the number of change and movement. You got 3 of them. That's hot. You know, travel and like that.
Growth. You're the kind of person has to be out there doing things, moving. The 0 out here means you don't have any limits. You can do anything. Like whatever you tried, you'd be good at, you know? But it can scatter you, especially with all these 5s here. Makes it tough to pick the thing you want to do. You'd need to have the kind of job that would never be the same. Know what I mean? You have to be in the middle of the action.
She looked at me for confirmation.
Weird, I said, for lack of anything better.
Nettie shot us a look. She had one arm around Heather, who had leaned against her for warmth.
We're trying to get some sleep here. Could you keep it down?
Sorry, Bibiana said. She abandoned the reading and stretched out on the mattress, making herself comfortable. The grid work she'd drawn seemed to glow in the half-light. The bulb in the cell remained bright, but we were reasonably warm. There was the sense of ongoing activity in the corridors beyond. A phone ringing, footsteps, the murmuring of voices, a cell door clanging shut. At intervals, the smell of cigarette smoke seemed to drift through the vents. Somewhere on the floor below us were the dormitory rooms that housed the 50 to 60 women doing county time in any given period. I could feel myself begin to drift. At least we were out of the rain, and the bad guys couldn't get us. Unless they were somebody locked in the cell with us. Now there was a thought.
One good thing, Bibiana murmured drowsily.
What's that?
They didn't find that joint.
You are one lucky chick.
After that, there was quiet except for the occasional rustling of clothes as one of us turned on the mattress. The skinny white woman began to snore softly. I lay entertaining warm thoughts about Bibiana, realizing that from here on out, I'd remember her as the person I first got jailed with, a form of female bonding not commonly recognized. I'd have felt a lot better if Jimmy Tate had come to our rescue, but I really wasn't sure what he could have done to help. Right now, he was probably sitting in a cell over on the men's side in roughly the same fix. Crazy Jimmy Tate and Bibiana Diaz. What a pair they made.
Chapter 10. The next thing I knew, there was a jingling of keys. My eyes popped open. One of the female jail officers was unlocking the door. She was short and solid, built like she spent a lot of time at the gym. The other 4 women in the cell were still asleep. The jail officer pointed at me. Bleary-eyed, I propped myself up on one elbow, pushing the hair out of my face. I pointed at myself. Did she want me? Impatiently, she motioned me over to the door. I curled forward, rising to my feet as quietly as I could. There was no way to judge what time it was or how long I'd been asleep. I felt groggy and disoriented. Without a word, she opened the door and I passed through. I followed her down the corridor in my sock feet, wishing with all my heart that I could brush my teeth. I once dated a cop who had an 8-by-11-foot desk built for himself, boasting that the surface was the same size as the 2-man cells in Folsom Prison. The room I was ushered into was about that size, furnished with a plain wood table, 3 straight-backed wooden chairs, and a bulb covered with a milky globe. I would have bet money there was recording equipment in there somewhere. I peered under the table. No sign of a wire. I sat down on one of the chairs, wondering how best to comport myself. I knew I was a mess. My hair felt matted, probably sticking straight up in places.
I was sure my mascara and eyeliner now circled my eyes in that raccoon effect women so admire in themselves. The trampy outfit I'd concocted was not only wrinkled, but still felt faintly damp. Ah, well, at least if I were subjected to police brutality, I wouldn't mind bleeding on myself. The door opened and Lieutenant Dolan appeared in company with another, I was guessing, plainclothes detective. I felt a spurt of fear for the first time since this ghastly ordeal had begun. Dolan was the last man I wanted to have as a witness to my current state. I could feel a blush of embarrassment rise up my neck to my face. Dolan's companion was in his 60s, with a thick shock of silver hair brushed away from a square face, deep-set eyes, and a mouth that pulled down at the corners. He was taller than Dolan, and in much better shape, substantially built with wide shoulders and heavy-looking thighs. He wore a three-piece suit and a muted Glen plaid with a denim blue shirt and a wide maroon tie with a floral pattern, more fitting for a couch cover. He wore a gold ring on his right hand, a watch with a heavy gold band on his left. He made no particular attempt to be polite. If he had an opinion of me, nothing registered on his face. Together the two men seemed to fill the room. Dolan leaned out into the hall and said something to someone, then closed the door and pulled a chair up, straddling it. The other man sat down at the same time and crossed his legs at the knee, with a slight adjustment of his trousers. He held his big hands loosely in his lap and made no eye contact. Dolan seemed positively perky by comparison.
"I'm having some coffee brought in. You look like you could use some."
"How'd you know I was here?"
"One of the deputies recognized you when you were booked in and called me," he said.
"Who's this?" I asked with a glance at the other man. I didn't think he should have the advantage of anonymity. He clearly knew who I was, and enough about me to adopt an attitude of disinterest.
"Lieutenant Santos," Dolan said.
Santos made no move. What was this, my week to meet hostile men? I got up and leaned across the table with my hand held out. "Kinsey Milhone," I said. "Nice to meet you." His reaction was slow, and I wondered briefly just how rude he intended to be. We shook hands, and his eyes met mine just long enough to register a stony neutrality. I had thought at first he disliked me, but I was forced to amend that assessment. He didn't have an opinion of me at all. I might be useful to him. He hadn't decided yet. There was a rap at the door. Dolan leaned over and opened it. One of the deputies passed him a tray with three styrofoam cups of coffee, a carton of milk, and a few loose packets of sugar. Dolan thanked him and closed the door again. He set the tray on the table and passed a cup to me. Santos reached forward and took his. I poured some milk in mine and added two packs of sugar, hoping to jump-start myself for the questions coming up. The coffee wasn't hot, but the flavor was exquisite, as soft and sweet as caramel. "What happened to Jimmy Tate?" I asked.
"Right now he's looking at homicide, murder too. A good attorney might get it knocked down to voluntary manslaughter, but I couldn't count on it given his history," Dolan said. "You want to fill us in on the shooting?"
"Sure," I said glibly, knowing I'd have to stretch the truth a bit. "California Fidelity asked me to investigate Bibiana Diaz for possible fraud in a claim she filed. I've been trying to get close enough to pick up concrete evidence, but so far all I've netted are some fashion tips. The dead man's name is Chago. He's the brother of Raymond something or other, who's an old flame of Bibiana's. I gather Raymond sent Chago and his wife Donna up here to abduct Bibiana for reasons unknown. I can't get Bibiana to tell me what's going on, but they're clearly pissed." Santos spoke up.
"She and Raymond Maldonado were supposed to get married. She backed out. He doesn't take kindly to that sort of thing."
"I believe it," I said. "He apparently gave Chago instructions to smoke her if she didn't cooperate." Santos shifted in his chair, his voice flat.
"That's all bluff. Raymond wants her back."
I looked from one to the other. "If you already know all this stuff, why ask me?" Both men ignored me. I could see there wasn't going to be any point in getting crabby about the situation.
Dolan consulted a small, spiral-bound notebook, leafing back a page.
What's the story on Jimmy Tate? How'd he get involved?
I'm not sure, I said. I gather he and Bibiana have been embroiled in some kind of heavy-duty sexual relationship for the past couple of months. It seems to be serious, for the moment at any rate. I went on detailing the day's work, filling in as much as I knew about the dead man, which wasn't much, and about Jimmy Tate, which was considerable. As fond as I was of Tate, I couldn't see any reason to shield him from police scrutiny when it came to the shooting. There were other witnesses at the scene, and for all I knew, Dolan had already talked to them. When I finished, there was a silence. I looked down at my hands, realizing that I'd systematically destroyed my now empty cup in the course of my narrative. I placed fragments on the table.
And Tate did the shooting, Dolan said at length.
Well, I didn't actually see that, but it's a fair assumption. He fired twice at the car, and after I hit the pavement, there were several more shots fired. I don't think Bibiana was armed.
What about the other woman, Donna? She have a gun?
Not that I saw, at least not in the restaurant. She could have had one stashed in the car, I suppose. Hasn't she turned up? I didn't think Dolan was going to answer, but I liked pretending we were equals. Just us law enforcement types having a friendly little tete-a-tete here at the county jail. Dolan surprised me with a response.
She took a hit. Nothing serious. Looks like a bullet ricocheted off something and grazed her collarbone. We picked her up in a phone booth a few blocks away. Probably interrupted a call to Raymond, though she wouldn't admit it.
She's in the hospital?
For the time being. We'll hang on to her if we can, just to see what she has to tell us.
About what? Dolan slid a look to Santos, like he was checking his hole card in a game of poker. I had the feeling Santos was making a decision. His expression didn't seem to change, but something must have been communicated between the two of them.
I guess we better tell you what's happening, he said.
His voice was rumbling and his delivery methodical.
You've stumbled into a bit of a sticky situation here.
Oh, yeah, tell me about it. Santos tipped his chair back against the wall and laced his hands across his head.
I had a task force made up of a number of agencies working to uncover what we believe is one of the biggest auto insurance fraud operations ever mounted in Southern California. You've worked in this business long enough to know what I'm talking about. Los Angeles County is the nation's automobile insurance fraud capital. Now it's spreading through Ventura and Santa Teresa counties. This particular ring is only one of dozens that generate an estimated $500 million to $1 billion in phony claims every year. In this case, we're looking at 15 lawyers, 24 medical doctors, 6 chiropractors. On top of that, a rotating pool of some 50 to 60 individuals recruited to participate in the trumped-up incidents that comprise the claims.
He pushed away from the wall, sitting upright, the front legs of the chair hitting the floor with a chirp.
You with me so far?
Oh, I'm here, I said. He leaned forward, resting one arm on the table. I noticed his manner toward me was warming somewhat. He was a man animated by his work. I had no idea where he was going with the explanation, but it was clear he hadn't driven all the way up from Los Angeles in the dead of night just to deliver this deadpan rendition of his professional concerns.
We've put this case together bit by bit, piece by piece, over the last 2 years, and we're still not in a position to shut them down.
I don't see the connection, I said. Bibiana isn't part of the ring, is she?
She was. Raymond Maldonado started out as a capper. At this point, we believe he's one of the kingpins, but we can't prove it yet. You know how these rings operate?
Not really, I said. The people I'm used to dealing with are strictly amateurs.
Well, the methods probably overlap to some extent, he said. These days, the pros tend to avoid the big kill in favor of submitting fairly innocuous small claims that can be converted into large sums of money. They collect compensation for hard-to-disprove injuries like whiplash and lower back pain. You know the MO on that.
He didn't really seem to require a response.
It's the capper's job to recruit the owner of a vehicle, usually someone unemployed who's hard up for cash.
They take out an assigned risk insurance policy on the car through the ring's agent. The capper then gives the car owner the names of two passengers, totally fictitious, who ride with the owner. He also comes up with names of people allegedly in the second car. We're talking about 6 or 7 claims per incident. There's a variation on that one called Bulls and Cows, where both cars are part of the scam. The bull, the car with insurance, rams into the cow, which is the uninsured car filled with passengers, all of whom suffer fictitious injuries. Most of the time, the insured vehicle is some junker that's been insured without being examined. I've handled some claims where it's all faked, where there's not even a staged accident, I said.
Oh, we got those too. In Maldonado's case, some are paper accidents and some are staged. We got a line on this ring in the first place because the same set of names kept cropping up on supposedly unrelated claims. Same insurance agent, same attorney. The investigator finally had the names run through the computer and found links to 25 previous cases. Most of those were fictitious. One claimant's address turned out to be the La Brea Tar Pits. Another was an abandoned bus depot.
What's their setup? I asked.
The ploy is called a swoop and squat, which requires the use of two cars. They pull this maneuver out on one of the surface roads, probably 5 or 6 times a week.
I'm surprised they don't try the freeways, I remarked.
He shook his head. Too dangerous. These guys aren't interested in getting killed. What they do is choose a mark, usually someone in an expensive vehicle or a commercial van. Anything with a likelihood of being well insured. A vehicle they call the squat car positions itself in front of the mark. These drivers are tooling down the road at 35 miles an hour, everybody minding his own business. At a signal, a second car, called a swoop, cuts in front of the squat car, which brakes sharply, forcing the mark to rear-end it. The swoop car takes off. The squat and the mark pull over to the side like good citizens and exchange license numbers. At this point, the mark is usually pretty upset. Here he's rear-ended another vehicle, and he knows the responsibility is his. The driver in the squat car is full of sympathy. Hell, he can afford to be, confirming just what the mark wants to believe, that it wasn't his fault.
But his insurance company pays anyway, I said.
Has to. You rear-end somebody, you're liable in this state. Turns out the squat's got all these problems resulting from the accident. He sees a lawyer who tells him he better see a doctor. Or he might be referred to a chiropractor.
All of them in cahoots.
All in cahoots, Lieutenant Santos said.
And Bibiana got involved in the ring through Raymond?
It looks that way. From the information we pieced together, Raymond recruited her 2 years ago, though he's known her much longer. They were all set to get married about a year ago. But for some reason, she pulled out. March, she did a disappearing act, and a short time later surfaced in Santa Teresa. It looks, on the face of it, like she meant to go straight, but she had a hell of a time finding work. She finally picked up a job with a dry cleaning establishment, but it doesn't pay much, and in the end, I guess she couldn't resist trying a little scam or two of her own.
I was beginning to see how it all fit together. And now my investigation has jeopardized yours.
Not yet, but it looks like you're getting close. We can't afford to have you blundering in unawares, which is not the only problem we face. It looks like we've got a leak somewhere. Critical information spilling through the pipeline into Raymond's ear. On at least 3 occasions, we've had raids set up, most recently on an auto body shop he owns in El Segundo. We have arrest and search warrants up the yin-yang. By the time we get there, the whole operation's been shut down, and we walk into an empty facility. Nothing left on the premises but a tire iron and a Pepsi can.
I don't get it. What are you looking for?
Lieutenant Santos paused to clear his throat. Files, records. You follow the paper, and it leads right to Raymond. We can pick him up. But by then the evidence has either been moved or destroyed, and the DA throws the case out.
So it was all for nothing, this raid you talked about?
Not quite. We took out the guy at the top, plus half a dozen other players. A couple of attorneys and some MDs, two chiropractors. Raymond just turned around and expanded his piece of the operation. He used the bus to move himself up into the slot we cleared for him. We're going after him again, of course, but we have to track down this snitch first, or it's the same story all over. In the meantime, we're trying another angle we think might work. The problem is, since we don't know where the leak is, it's hard to know who we can trust.
Dolan stirred restlessly, speaking up for the first time since Santos had started filling me in.
As much as I hate to say this, the breach might originate in one of the departments up here. We think that's how Raymond found out Bibiana was in Santa Teresa. She got arrested here a month ago, and somebody dimed her out.
I could feel a quick spark of recollection.
Oh, yeah. I remember now she mentioned that. She's worried sick about Raymond finding her.
She's got reason to worry. The man's got serious problems, Santos remarked. I've seen the results of some of his handiwork.
I still don't quite understand why you're telling me this stuff.
There was a brief silence, and then Dolan spoke up.
If we can move you into position with these people, we might have another shot at them.
I stared at him blankly.
Oh, come on. You're not serious.
I looked from one to the other, but neither of them said a word.
How do you propose to do that?
Dolan smiled, with no particular mirth.
You've already done the hard part. You've established a relationship with Bibiana, which is something we can't do.
What good is that? I thought you said she was finished with Raymond.
Dolan shrugged.
But he's not done with her. If Donna managed to get word through to him, he's probably on his way up. Just stick with Bibiana, especially if he wants to take her back to L.A. with him. We want you on the inside.
Wait a minute. I ran into Donna over at the CF offices. What if she remembers me?
Don't worry about Donna. We'll keep her out of circulation.
I ran a hand through my hair, which was so tricked out with hairspray, it felt like a wig.
Oh, man, you guys are really nuts, I said. I don't know beans about undercover work.
We're not asking you to go in there cold.
Oh, that really sets my mind at rest.
He ignored that.
You'd be thoroughly briefed. We'd have backup in place, somebody who'd know where you were at all times.
I found myself looking from one to the other. I didn't trust them. I kept thinking there was a missing piece in here somewhere, something they were holding back.
Somehow, I'm assuming you've tried it before.
Without much luck, Santos said. In this situation, we think a female could be effective. These guys don't credit women with much intelligence. You'd have some protective coloring despite the fact that you're not Hispanic yourself. Are you interested?
No.
Dolan put a hand behind his ear as if he hadn't heard right.
I'm not going to do it, Lieutenant Dolan. It's been 10 years since I was a police officer, and even then, I never did undercover work. Forget it! I'm not trained for that stuff, and it's too damn dangerous.
Sometimes it's the only option, Santos said.
It might be your only option, but it's not mine.
Santos broke off eye contact.
You're looking at a year of county jail time on this battery. Assaulting a police officer is a felony. We can have your license pulled.
I stared at him.
So now you're going to threaten me? Oh, great. I love that. Well, guess what? I'm not going to do your dirty work. I don't give a shit about Raymond Maldonado.
I could feel the heat flash through my frame. I hate to be bullied, and I don't relish being beaten with a stick as the motivation for my behavior.
You want a performance out of me, you better start someplace else.
Santos apparently intended to pursue the point, but Dolan made an impatient gesture, silencing him.
Let's just discuss it before you say anything.
The answer's no.
Again, the two men exchanged a look I couldn't quite read.
End of Disc 3. Disc 4.
Again, the two men exchanged a look I couldn't quite read. It seemed clear they were working every angle in the book, which was laughable in my view, because I wasn't going to yield.
Dolan sat forward in his chair, and his voice dropped a notch.
One more thing you should know, and then you can do anything you want. Your friend Parnell Perkins was one of Raymond's employees. We think Raymond killed him, but we don't have any proof.
I don't believe it.
Perkins's real name was Darrell Weaver. He was working for an insurance company down in Compton. Raymond was running all his claims through Weaver until the two had a falling out. Weaver left Los Angeles and moved up here, changed his name, and went to work for California Fidelity.
Suddenly, I understood why he'd passed Bibiana's file on to Mary Bellflower. He probably assumed that Raymond and Bibiana were back together, that Raymond would be on his trail if he didn't do something quick. The sight of Bibiana's name must have made his heart stop.
Santos came to life again, taking up the thread.
He came to us about a month ago and offered to cooperate. After he was killed, Santa Teresa Police Department ran the prints and notified us, which is why I'm here.
That's why you buried the homicide investigation, I said, to protect the larger one.
That's right, Dolan replied. We can't afford to have Raymond find out what we're up to. We haven't dropped the investigation. We're just pursuing it quietly.
The room was suddenly still. They let the silence accumulate. I took my time, stalling long enough to consider the implications. A little voice inside saying, "Don't do it, don't do it."
"What's the timetable?" I said cautiously.
I was hooked, and they knew it.
Dolan looked at Santos.
"Tight. Half a day at best."
"What are you really asking me to do?"
"Three things. Find the leak, find out where the files are, and find us proof that Raymond killed your buddy."
Santos chimed in again, the two of them working me like sheepdogs.
"You just tell us what you need. We'll give you anything you want."
Dolan said, "The object is to get yourself recruited. You can take it from there, with or without Bibiana's cooperation."
I thought it over briefly, all the time wondering at the wisdom of my consenting. I could feel my mental processes kick in despite the lingering misgivings. If you're talking about staged accidents, it seems like it'd be smart to have a dummy policy in the name of Hannah Moore.
"Could you arrange that through CF?" Dolan asked.
"I could, but it'd be better if it came from you. You'd have to clear it with Mac Voorhees, and it'd probably still have to go through channels."
"The fewer people who know, the better. And we have to work fast," Dolan said. "Is that going to present a problem?"
Santos asked me. I said, "I think CF would be willing to cooperate."
"We'll ask you to wear a wire," Santos said. "We can get a tech here by 9 this morning and get a unit on you then."
"Won't Raymond and his cronies search me?"
Santos said,
"I doubt it, but if they do, we'll be in earshot, don't forget."
Dolan seemed to sense I wasn't comforted.
"If you're wired, we can have a car full of plainclothes parked half a block away. We want you to have all the protection you can get. This may be the best opportunity we have to get at these folks, and we don't want to blow it. Any questions?"
"I'm sure I'll think of some." Santos said,
"We'll have another chance to brief you. Right now, we're going to put you back in with Bibiana. Morning comes, we'll get the two of you bailed out. Take the credit yourself. It's good to have the woman in your debt. We'll delay your release until the wire tech comes in.
Won't she be suspicious if she's out and I'm not?
I'm sure you'll find a way to cover, Dolan said dryly. In the meantime, make arrangements to connect with her later in the day.
What if Raymond shows up before then?
We'll think of something else. Oh, and while we're on the subject...
Dolan jotted down a special telephone number where he could be reached at any hour. I tucked the slip of paper in my sock. He glanced at his watch, and then got up as a signal to end the meeting. I got to my feet. Santos and I shook hands.
What time is it? I asked. 4:02.
I'm too old to be up at this hour, I said, and then glanced at Dolan. Can you do me a favor? I left my black leather jacket in the restaurant and my VW still parked in the meat locker side lot. I probably can't get over there until this afternoon. Could you ask about the jacket and warn the meter maid? I don't want to get towed or ticketed.
Will do. You don't want to screw around with those meter gals, Dolan said.
He flashed a smile and then held out his hand to me.
Thanks.
I haven't done anything yet. The female corrections officer took me back to the drunk tank and locked me in. I felt nearly sick with fatigue, my brain buzzing from the coffee, body dragging from the lack of sleep. I moved over to my mattress and sank down gratefully, curling up on my side with my face turned toward the others. Bibiana was awake, her eyes pinned on me suspiciously.
Where have you been?
The homicide detective had some questions about the shooting.
Has Donna been picked up?
She's in the hospital at the moment with superficial injuries. Tate's here on the men's side. They're talking about charging him with murder, but I don't see how they can. Manslaughter's more like it.
Bastards!
He'll survive.
Yeah, I suppose.
Bibiana seemed on the verge of drifting back to sleep. I hesitated briefly, then held my nose and plunged right in. By the way, while I was out there, I put a call through to my bail bondsman, who's posting bail for both of us. He'll be over here at 8:00.
Her eyes flew open. You're bailing me out, too? Why would you do that? I don't have no kind of money like that. You're talking $500.
So, you can owe me. Don't sweat it.
Her look was puzzled.
But why now? How come you didn't do that in the first place?
I just remembered I had money in a savings account. My car's in the shop. I was saving to get the tranny fixed. What the hell? Let it sit. It's not doing me any good here.
She hadn't bought my story yet. I can't believe you'd do that.
The skinny woman piped up from the mattress in an aggravated tone of voice.
What's the matter with you, crazy? Take the money and shut your mouth.
Bibiana flicked a look at the woman and smiled in spite of herself. She studied me for a moment and then murmured a,
thank you.
Her eyes closed again. She turned over on her stomach and tucked her arms under her for warmth. Within minutes, she dozed off. The air in the cell was permeated with the scent of sleeping bodies. Damp socks, stale breath, unwashed hair. I had thought my cellmates might waken with my return, but no one else stirred. The light in the corridor shone dimly. The quiet became absolute. On the floor, I could still see the numerology grid Bibiana had drawn for me with spit. Movement and change. Well, now, wasn't that the truth? Chapter 11. What happened next was the result of a bureaucratic error for which responsibility was never assigned. The paperwork came down at 6:00, and Bibiana and I were mustered out. Just like that. There was no word from Dolan and Santos, no sign of the tech who was supposed to fit me with a wire. I kept waiting for the jail officer to call me back, take me aside under some pretext or other for the promised briefing. What was the deal here? Had there been a change of plans? For the life of me, I couldn't think of a reason to delay my release. I'd just have to play the situation as it came to me. I was carrying my personal property, still sealed in the clear plastic pouch. They'd returned our shoes, belts, and other potentially death-dealing items, like tampons. I was feeling vile, but the first breath of fresh air restored my good spirits to some extent. After a mere 4 hours in the slammer, the freedom had a giddiness attached to it. The morning was cold and foggy, the ground still saturated from the rain the night before. The scruffy hills around the jail looked serene. Little birdies sang. The passing traffic out on the freeway seemed to ebb and surge, rhythmic white noise, very restful, like the ocean at high tide. I longed for a shower, for breakfast, for privacy. I'd have to conjure up an excuse to separate from Bibiana, contact Dolan, and find out what the hell was going on. In the meantime, I was going to have to stick to her like glue. The first order of business, of course, was to find a ride home. I checked my plastic pouch, feeling like a mental patient just released from the institution. I had $10 in cash, which I decided to blow on a taxi. I'm too cheap for cabs as a rule, but I really felt I deserved this one. Bibiana and I clopped down the long drive that led away from the jail. I was a sight to behold, tank top and wrinkled black pants, my little white socks turning black where the dye on my wet pumps had rubbed off. Bibiana wasn't looking all that hot herself. The red of her dress was unflattering by day, a mismatch for the spike heels which the rain had pulled out of shape. She was applying a fresh coat of lipstick, open compact held in front of her face as she walked. She'd stripped off her pantyhose, which had been riddled with runs after our adventures of the night before. Her legs looked pale and scrawny in the harsh light of day, and her dress was as pleated across the lap as the bellows of an accordion. Oh, well, I suppose there are times when you rejoice just to find yourself on the move again. Behind us were the chain-link fences, incessant lights, the locks, the barred windows. In spite of our liberation, I couldn't think of a thing to say to her. Thanks. It's been fun. We'll have to do this again sometime soon. The simple rules of etiquette didn't seem to apply. Bibiana tucked her compact in her purse, her manner anxious. Did they ask you about the shooting? I asked.
Not yet. Some homicide cop is supposed to come around to my place later today.
What are you going to tell them?
Who cares about that? I gotta find a way to get out of here before Raymond shows up.
I felt an anxiety of my own. What the hell was going on here? Where was Dolan? What was I supposed to do? Suddenly Bibiana clutched my arm, digging her nails into my flesh.
Sweet Jesus, she whispered, staring dead ahead.
I followed her gaze, realizing belatedly that her attention was riveted on a dark green Ford that was parked down the road, its rear end lowered until the pan nearly scraped the ground. Her fear was so palpable that the hair rose up on the back of my neck.
Who's that? It's Raymond. Oh, God!
Her voice broke. Tears leapt to her eyes, and she made a peculiar squeaking sound in her throat. I assessed the situation rapidly, without knowing quite what to do. Of all the bad luck! Apparently Donna had managed to put a call through to him. He'd been leaning on the front fender, watching cars pass on the frontage road. When he caught sight of us, he began to amble in our direction. Bibiana, cool it. Just calm down. Let's head back to the jail. She shook her head.
Even if the cops took us home, he'd catch up eventually. Don't leave me. Swear you won't. Whatever happens, just go along with it. Don't set him off, or he'll tear the place apart and you along with it.
All right. All right. Come on now, just be cool. I'm not going anywhere.
Promise you won't leave me.
I promise, I said. At first, I didn't get it. At that distance, the guy looked like anybody else. He was tall and very slender, with wide shoulders and a narrow waist. From what I could see of him, he was dressed like a fashion plate. Leather sport coat, pleated trousers, pointy black patent leather shoes, capped with silver at the toes, mirrored sunglasses. He could have been Latino or Italian, dark hair and olive skin. I placed him in his early 30s. He had his hands in his pockets, and his manner seemed relaxed. Bibiana's fingers were ice cold. She clung to my hand the way a friend might in the middle of a horror movie, just before the guy with the butcher knife leaps out. I couldn't see anything in his appearance that would warrant her response. When he reached us, he took his sunglasses off. He had dark, thick lashes, a full mouth, a dimple in his chin. Once he was in close range, I realized there was something wrong. His eyes had rolled back in his head, leaving narrow slits of white along the lower rims. His face and body underwent a series of convulsive movements. He blinked his eyes. The corner of his mouth jumped involuntarily. His lips opened wide, then his head jerked back twice. The effect was weird, a sequence of behaviors that set his whole body in motion, culminating in a sound that was half shout, half cough. He moved his right arm, rolling it in its socket as if to loosen tension. In memory, a buzzer sounded dimly, and I recalled the existence of some medical condition that produced just this effect, ticks and shouts. He made no reference to it, nor did Bibiana, who seemed more concerned about his reaction to Chago's death.
"I didn't do it. I swear to God, I didn't kill him. I'm sorry. It was an accident. Oh, please, Raymond, I didn't have anything to do with it."
His expression had softened, becoming nearly wistful as he took her by the shoulders and pulled her in close to him, rubbing his hands up and down her bare arms.
"You don't know how happy I am to see you."
I could see her tense up, holding herself away from him slightly, though she couldn't do much without perhaps risking some kind of outburst. He began to nuzzle her hair.
"Oh, baby, angel, sweet thing, I'm glad to see you," he murmured, his voice soft. "This is beautiful. I really missed you, you know that?"
He drew back from her then, clamping his fingers around her jaw so that she was forced to look at him.
"Hey, it's all right. Everything's okay. Don't worry."
His gaze moved across to me.
"Who is this?"
His head jerked twice. "Hannah Moore," I said. She flicked a look at him.
"This is Raymond Maldonado."
He held his hand out.
"Nice to meet you. Sorry about all this. My brother was killed last night."
We shook hands. His were warm and soft, his grip firm.
"I'm sorry about your brother. That's terrible."
The pleasantries created an air of unreality. Raymond glanced at Bibiana.
"You ready?"
"I'm not going. Raymond, I mean it. I'm done with all that. I don't want to go back to Los Angeles. I told you. I didn't have anything to do with..."
He took her arm and began to walk her toward the car. I could see her mouth twist, and his fingers dug into her elbow painfully. She babbled on. He raised a hand as if to silence her, warding off the spill of words. She pressed a hand to her lips. He turned his head to one side. He hunched a shoulder, did a neck roll, and took a deep breath, eyes sliding up in his head. His face jerked to the right, once, twice. His eyes came open, the irises sliding into view, large, dark brown, and clear. He continued toward the car. I followed without invitation, calculating rapidly. Here was my quarry, Raymond Maldonado in the flesh. I knew I was being offered the perfect opportunity, but I'd had no prep time. If I went in without a briefing, I could blow the whole operation. I couldn't afford to start playing undercover cop, but what choice did I have? He was walking so rapidly, I had to do a quick step to keep up. Bibiana was getting into passive resistance, slowing down, hanging back.
"Listen, Raymond, maybe I could go another time, okay? Hannah's been talking about going home with me," she said, And we do have plans.
He turned and smiled at me.
We're getting married.
Today?
He shook his head.
Soon, though. It was all set up, but she said she wasn't ready. Next thing I know, she takes off. Just like that, she's gone. Doesn't even leave me a note. I wake up one morning, and she's disappeared.
Bibiana's face was drawn and pale.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you, Raymond, but what could I do? What was I going to say to you? I tried to tell you.
He raised a finger to his lips, and then he pointed it at her reprovingly.
You don't leave a guy, Bibiana.
He turned to me, one hand out, palm up, arguing his case.
I've been in love with this woman for how many years now? 6? 8? What am I going to do with her, huh?
Bibiana was silent, her eyes full of dread. I couldn't believe the change that had come over her. All the confidence was gone, the high energy, the sexiness. My own mouth was getting dry, and a whisper of fear tickled me in the small of the back. We reached the car. Another fellow stepped out. A Latino with a dark-knit watch cap pulled down to his ears. His eyes were black, as flat and dull as spots of old paint. He had acne scars on his cheeks and a mustache made up of about 14 hairs, some of which looked like they were drawn on by hand. He was my size. He wore sharply pressed khaki pants with numerous pleats across the front and an immaculate white undershirt. Tufts of underarm hair were visible, straight and dark. His bare arms were muscular, tattoos extending from his shoulders to his wrists. A graphic rendition of Donald Duck on his right and Daffy Duck on his left.
That's a copyright violation, I remarked, nearly giddy with anxiety.
That's Luis, Raymond said.
He had a gun. He held the rear car door open, like a well-mannered chauffeur. Bibiana balked, one arm braced against the car.
I'm not going without Hannah.
Raymond seemed taken aback.
Why not?
She's my friend, and I want her with me, she said.
I don't even know this girl, he said.
Bibiana's eyes flashed.
God damn it! This is just like you, Raymond. You say you love me. You say you'll do anything. First thing I ask for, all I get is an argument. Well, I'm sick of it.
Okay, okay. She can go if she wants. Anything you say.
Bibiana turned to me with a look filled with mute pleading.
Please, just for a few days.
I felt myself shrug. I got nothing else to do, I said. Bibiana got in first, sliding across the back seat. Raymond slid in beside her. I hesitated briefly, wondering at the wisdom of it. Luis turned the gun so that it was pointing at my chest. It clarified my thinking most emphatically. I got into the back seat. The dashboard was covered in white terry cloth with Raymond and Bibiana machine-stitched in glossy green script across the face of it. A rosary hung from the rearview mirror along with the Sacred Heart of Jesus, bleeding. The interior of the car, including front and back seats, was upholstered in white acrylic teddy bear fur. There was a Radio Shack car phone on the front seat. All the car lacked was a collection of bobbleheads on the rear, or a 4-inch Virgin Mary with little magnetized feet. The minute I got in, I knew I'd made a mistake. Luis started the engine without a word. The mufflers sounded like distant jackhammers as he pulled out onto the road. He kept both hands on the steering wheel with his arms fully extended, his trunk and head inclined back. He made a U-turn and sped toward the freeway. Raymond's ticking recurred at perhaps 3-minute intervals, sometimes less. I found myself unnerved at first, especially in the absence of any explanation. The others seemed to take it for granted. At first I would jump every time he did it, but I found myself adjusting, marveling that anybody had to live like that. Was there no help for him? Bibiana now seemed to be in the mood for an argument,
maybe to forestall any amorous intentions. How'd you find out about last night?
Donna called and told me some of it before the cops picked her up. Who's the guy?
What guy?
The guy last night shot Chago.
How do I know who he was? Just somebody in the restaurant with a gun.
Donna said you were with him.
I was there by myself.
Not what she says.
She said that? It's bullshit. What did he look like? She tell you that?
She didn't have a chance. Squad car pulled up and she hung up. Said some chick was there too.
She's blowing smoke up your skirt. What a bitch. I was there by myself when Chago showed up with a gun. Maybe the guy was an off-duty cop, or just your average citizen with a gun.
Raymond's face darkened.
That would really piss me off. What's the matter with people? Too many fucking handguns around.
He turned and looked at me.
Every day in the paper, somebody gets blown away. L.A. Times. You read Metro? Scares the shit out of me.
He held a hand up, blocking words in.
You know that slogan says, guns don't kill people, people kill people. What a crock that is.
Luis has a gun, I remarked helpfully.
That's different. He's a lieutenant. He's like a bodyguard for me. I can't believe some joker in a restaurant shoots my brother for no fucking reason.
All the little birdies had flown out of this man's tree. I sat with my eyes straight ahead and my mouth shut, remembering what Bibiana had told me about his temper. Raymond turned to Bibiana and started kissing her, his hands moving across her breasts, with an intimacy I found embarrassing. She was compliant, but she rolled an eye at me frantically across his shoulder. I looked out the window. I leaned forward and tapped Luis on the shoulder, trying the only Spanish phrase I'm familiar with.
¿Habla usted inglés? Shit, lady. What do I look like, a retard? He said.
His English wasn't even spoken with an accent, and I had to wonder if the gangbanger outfit was an affectation.
Oh. Well, could you pull over at this next corner and let me the fuck out? I gotta make a quick phone call.
This did not produce the desired results. I kept my tone conversational as I turned to Raymond, placing my mouth up close to his ear.
Excuse me, Raymond. Could you have the guy let me out up here?
Raymond had run his hand up under Bibiana's skirt, pushing the fabric back, running a finger under the rim of her underpants. There was nothing remotely sexual about it. He was claiming his rights. I could hear her murmuring,
"Fantastic. Oh, baby, that's great."
Anything to appease and placate his neediness. The driver caught my eye in the rearview mirror and winked at me conspiratorially. He flipped on the car radio to mask the escalating sounds. Salsa music filled the car. This was repellent. I was fully prepared to fling myself out, risking concussion and broken bones, just to escape from this brothel of faux fur and religious artifacts. I waited until the car slowed as we approached the on-ramp to the freeway. Then I slid my hand under the door handle and gave it a yank. Nothing happened. Both of the window cranks had been removed in the rear. I leaned my forehead against the tinted glass, staring out the window. Behind me, I could hear Raymond fumble with his belt buckle and the zipper to his pants. This was worse than an X-rated video. I turned and stared at them.
God, Bibiana, I said loudly. How rude! How do you think I feel, sitting here while you screw some stud? Why don't you keep your hands to yourself, okay?
Raymond turned a sex-groggy face toward me, his eyes at half-mast. His mouth seemed gorged, his chin laved in lipstick, his hair standing straight up. The whole car smelled like hormones, sex juice, and underpants. Luis, all a smirk, tried to peer into the back seat through the rearview mirror. I turned on him savagely.
Hey, Jack, what are you looking at?
And then to Raymond.
I'm sorry, Raymond. I know it's not your fault how these people act. Bibiana pushed herself into an upright position, doing what she could to pull her skirt back into place. She murmured,
"Sorry."
She had a big hickey on her neck where Raymond had been slurping away on her. Raymond actually seemed embarrassed, tucking in his shirt. He went through a sequence of behaviors that included the head jerking and the neck rolls. I plowed right on.
"I told her I got a steady boyfriend in the slammer," I said to him. "The last thing I need is watching you two get it on. God, she's got no class."
I sat back in the seat, brushing imaginary lint off my black pants. Raymond pulled out a handkerchief and wiped some of Bibiana's lipstick off his chin. His smile was sheepish.
"Take it easy. It's not her fault. She can't help it," he said.
"Well, I get sick of hearing her brag about you. Why can't she keep her opinions to herself?"
"She brags about me?"
"No, Raymond, I'm just saying that to hear myself talk," I said. "I don't suppose I could trouble anybody for some grub. We haven't had breakfast, and I'm starving to death."
Raymond leaned forward and gave Luis a thump on the head.
"What's the matter with you? Pull off here. Didn't you hear what the lady said?"
Raymond studied me with amusement, talking to Bibiana over his shoulder.
"I like your friend here. She's got some spunk."
"This isn't spunk, Raymond. This is irritation," I said.
Bibiana eyed me uneasily, but I was really on a roll. I was making up Hannah's character as I went along, and it was liberating as hell. She was short-tempered, sarcastic, outspoken, and crude. I could get used to this. License to misbehave. Raymond smiled at me.
"This okay, boss?"
Luis, of the handsomely tattooed arms, was slowing near the entrance to a McDonald's on Upper State Street.
"This okay with you?"
Raymond said to me. He seemed genuinely concerned that the restaurant meet with my approval.
"Raymond, this is perfect. Way to go."
I ate 3 Egg McMuffins. If it had been 10 a.m., I'd have had a couple of QPs with cheese instead. Bibiana couldn't eat. She sat and picked at an apple Danish while Luis and Raymond, with a flair for the Gallic, ordered French toast and French fries with a side of maple syrup. I had spotted a telephone in the narrow corridor leading to the ladies' room, but the wall-mounted instrument was in plain view of the table where the 4 of us sat. Raymond kept his arm loosely draped around Bibiana's shoulders, rubbing her upper arm in a manner meant to be sexy. Guys learn to do that in high school, and it's very irritating. She was back to being passive, obsequious, and subdued. I wanted to see her sass him, resist. I wanted her to thumb her nose at him. It was not going to help her to act like a whipped dog. It was time she stood up for herself again. If she acted like a victim, the guy was going to treat her like one. I got up from the table. I gotta go to the camp.